Welcome to the Heartbreak to Happiness Show with Sara Davison. If you're struggling with a breakup and you feel shocked, angry, betrayed, devastated, or sad and alone, then this podcast is for you. Best-selling author and award-winning host Sara Davison shares how you too can get on with your life to heal, grow, and move from heartbreak to happiness. Here's your host, Sara Davison.
Welcome back to the show. And today, my guest is Richard Grannan. Now, Richard and I have done a couple of events over the years together, and I am a big fan of his work. Now, Richard's predominant area of interest is in helping people protect themselves from exploitation and bullying at any level, personal, cultural, or political. This has led to him studying narcissism and psychopathy and its effects, particularly in emotional dysregulation, CPTSD, and codependence. Richard's vision is to empower individuals to break free of the strictures placed on them by others, to individuate and be the most authentic version of themselves possible. So I am super excited to welcome Richard Grannan to the show. Welcome, Richard.
Hello, thank you very much for having me on. It's very good of you.
Well, as you know, I'm a super fan, so pleasure is all mine. I know we've done a couple of events together in the past. You kindly came and spoke at one of my retreats, but I also spoke at one of your events, Divorcing a Narcissist. And I noticed on that video the other day, there's been nearly a million downloads or views of that video, which is insane. So obviously this is a massive topic, and I know you have a huge following. Most people are going to know who you are and what you do, but for those listeners around the world who don't, can you just tell us a little bit about the work that you do?
My name is Richard Grannan. Originally, I was a self-defense instructor and an NLP practitioner. I wanted to teach other martial arts instructors and people who are following my work in the self-defense field, like soldiers and bodyguards and so on, how to overcome people-pleaser syndrome, because they had an issue with asserting themselves. Didn't have an issue with shooting people in the head or punching them in the face, but when it came to asserting their personal boundaries and their personal lives, they had difficulties. So I created a project on YouTube that was called Spartan Life Coach that focused on overcoming codependency. And that quickly and organically grew into a discussion of personality disorders, narcissistic abuse, and emotional abuse. And so now I'm a content provider and author in that field.
Well, know of your work, and I'm always referring people to check out your YouTube channel, especially because that is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of my listeners, I know, are going through really tough breakups right now. A lot of them will be divorcing or breaking up from what I call difficult people, sort of dial down that intensity. But, you know, the abusive, maybe narcissistic behaviours that I know you talk a lot about. Interestingly, I've seen a massive increase in that in the recent years post-pandemic. I know the charity that I'm the patron of, again, have seen an increase in calls to their support line. Is this something that you've seen over the last couple of years?
Yes, I think there are a lot of economic and cultural factors that have led to a big spike in presence of narcissism. It seems to be particularly bad in romance, in the area of romance, whether it's a heterosexual relationship, homosexual relationship, doesn't seem to make a difference. There is this hostility and an entitlement to abuse and exploit and discard human beings. Not really sure where that's come from. I am aware that people are feeling pretty traumatized, and traumatized people tend to fall back to infantile responses. But yes, there does seem to be a spike in narcissistic abuse.
Say infantile responses. What do you mean by that?
Well, narcissism is a natural and healthy infant state. So up until the age of, say, two years old, 18 months, 2 years old, we are all narcissists. We are born believing that we are the center of the universe. We have zero ego boundaries, no ability to empathize with others because we just don't have the hardware or the software to do that. And so we see the world through narcissistic eyes, a fundamentally narcissistic perspective. when people are traumatized, they regress. We regress as human beings. The deeper and longer the trauma, the more we regress. We regress to our early 20s, through our late adolescence, right the way down, if the trauma is strong enough, to an infant state. So we would call these infantile defense mechanisms. This is a preconscious defense mechanism. So people aren't aware that they're behaving narcissistically. They're not really aware, I think, that they're traumatized. That's just what they spontaneously do to get what they want, to defend themselves and so on.
Interesting. I think one of the things that I've seen with my clients recently, more than ever, is people saying to me, I think I'm the difficult one, Sara. I'm the difficult one. I'm making this relationship. In fact, I'm working with a client right now, and it's really challenging because she really firmly believes this is all her fault and that she is a difficult person. She's been told that a lot. Is this something that you see? Is that a normal experience when you've been in a relationship with somebody like this?
I think if you've got somebody who's got codependent tendencies, if they were raised as a black sheep in the family unit, and they had inappropriate amounts of responsibility and blame heaped upon them in their childhood, then in their intimate relationships, that will appear again. There is also the possibility that at times she is being difficult. There is also the possibility that at times she's not coming from her adult self in the intimate space. So she may be perfectly adult and reasonable in her job, in her relationship with her family, with friends, but then when it's time for love and sex and sexuality and real intimacy and vulnerability, she may be showing up as a different person. She may slip into a different ego state, a child ego state, an infantile response, become extremely emotionally dysregulated, become clingy, become demanding, so on and so forth. So she may be, it may be delusional. She may have something from childhood that makes her think that it's all her fault. Or she may actually be doing things that are provocative, and it could be bugs.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. You're so right. It's good advice. I hear a lot about people saying, well, in my childhood, you know, I was my parents' relationship maybe was dysfunctional. And so therefore, that's why I maybe go for this type of personality in relationships. Do you think that, you know, that's a reason, obviously, but is it essential? Because I have clients who had, you know, relatively, as they describe it, happy, content, loving, you know, relationships with role models. You know, how did these people find themselves in those toxic relationships?
Well, it depends on what you believe. I don't insist that people see the world through the same lens that I do, but I believe that economics and culture has a massive impact on how we live and the behaviors that become hyper-normalized. We are in late stage consumer capitalism. The system is crumbling. There is less on the table than there was before. What our parents had in terms of opportunity and what they could buy with their wealth and their capacity to accumulate wealth was much greater than what we have. Culture has also, just never mind our grandparents, but since our parents, has become more rigidly individualistic, which looks like narcissism, but isn't narcissism. But if we're rigidly individualistic, let me put it in plain English. We are not trained. We are not cultured to do relationships. This is an anti-intimacy culture. It's an anti-relationship culture. Relationships take work. They take sacrifice. And everybody nods and goes, yes, yes, I know. Oprah Winfrey told me I have to sacrifice and have to work, and then they do no work and they make no sacrifices. This is not a merry-go-round. It is a merry-go-round for some people. It's not a ride. It's not like a luxury holiday. It's not a product to be consumed. When you get into a relationship with somebody and you say, I want it to be long-term. Okay. So you want to be living with another human being exclusively for the next 30 or 40 years. And I say that to people and I look them dead in the eyes and I see their terror. They're terrified because they're children. They don't want that, but they say that they do. This is something that we need to deal with. Like if you're putting your foot on the gas and on the brakes at the same time, the car will judder a little bit. It's quite dangerous and it damages the engine and it exhausts the engine. A lot of people are exhausted. They say they want intimacy, but they don't want to commit. They say they want love, but they don't want to sacrifice all of their options. Too effing bad. Too bad. My sympathy for people in this situation is not limitless, because I've been at this for 8 years. And I've seen the accusations of narcissism that people just fly around with now. Everybody who doesn't give me exactly what I want to a nuance is a narcissist. But it's not about you getting what you want. It's a give and take. People don't know how to give. They haven't got the foggiest clue how to be an adult in a relationship. Previously, it wasn't better. You just had no choice. Divorce was not an option, or it was less of an option. There was much more shame. I mentioned my parents' generation, dramatically different. Our parents' generation as Gen Xers, dramatically different from World War II generation. There was a scandal within my family because my grandmother was a Protestant and my grandfather was a Catholic. How far we've come since then. That's a very, very big leap. And they couldn't divorce. They fought so hard to get married. That wasn't an option for them. So I don't even know that if it's that things are worse. I think that we are at a point in culture where we're facing a challenge. We are adolescents. We must grow up out of our adolescence into adulthood. And it will be tough. It's not going to be fun. We're not going to be able to enjoy it as consumers. Yay, this is one big party. Nah, party's over, kids. You want to do intimacy? You want a long-term relationship in this culture? You're going to have to fight for it. And you're going to have to work damn hard for it.
I mean, I absolutely agree. You have to work at it. But isn't it, you know, some people are finding themselves in relationships that however hard they work, they're going to be dysfunctional, right?
Yeah, because their partner isn't sacrificing. It's two people. It's consensual. It's like therapy. If I do therapy with somebody and they don't want to speak to me, I'm not a wizard. I'm not a magician. I can't strap them to a chair like in Clockwork Orange and pin their eyes open and force them to listen. It's consensual. In my humble opinion, we've lost the concept of consent. It's become meaningless. We've lost the concept of agency. Everything is passive. Everything is like, it's just happening to me. It's just happening. Look, your partner doesn't want to do the work for the relationship. Listen, I know it hurts, but let me look into the camera. They're not qualified for a relationship. Let it go. They can't do it. You ask a mechanic to fix your car. He neither wants to nor is capable of fixing it. So you spend an awful lot of time waiting for him to fix it, don't get fixed. We're going to have to start accepting some rather harsh red pill truths. Take that medicine, grieve for what was lost, and then move forward. If your partner won't work, they're not going to sacrifice. It's not going to happen. And all the affirmations and chanting and writing things down and doing, what do they do? These vision boards, it ain't going to help you, man. It's an anti-intimacy culture. If your partner is ideologically infected, they're not really your partner. They're just an option, and you're just their option for now. It's temporary in there. In their head, they may not think that. They may deny it till they're blue in their face, but in their heart, that's the truth that they're living. That's the nature of ideology.
So talking about that then, being in love with somebody who, I mean, I get asked all the time, did they ever love me, Sarah? Was that ever a real bond? And I guess that's one side of it. But then I guess the other side is also, did you ever really love them? Because how do you ever really know who they truly are?
And is it falling in love that makes people stay together somewhat happily and in peace for 40 years? I would say, who cares? Who cares? Look at our most ancient cultures. They did not marry based on falling in love. That's our obsession with pleasure, limerence, consumerism, sexual pleasure. Great, good for you. But in human history, that's not how empires were built. That's not how institutions were built. Sorry to be such a party pooper, but if you think you're going to be, if you try and rate the quality of the relationship by, was I in love? Did he ever love me? Grow up. What are you trying to do? Is the secret question, am I lovable? Okay, that's a question for your therapist. That's a question for your coach. That's a question for your counselor. That's something you have to resolve on your own. You try and resolve that through limerence, through this very superficial, biologically rooted, temporary hormonal state called falling in love. you're going to create such a mess. And everybody's creating a mess now. It doesn't, like, are you trying to build a 40-year relationship? Are you trying to live in the same house as someone in peace for 40 years? Or do you want pleasure? Because they're two completely different questions. If you just want pleasure, then date people on a 9 to 12 month cycle and then get rid of them.
I mean, some people, I know some of my listeners are going to be thinking, this guy is brutal.
I'm horrible. I'm horrible, but it's all from love. This is real love. Forget the fake love. The people who give you your beautiful dreams, I'll give you, you know, it's all lies. I'll give you an ugly truth, but it can save you. It will save you a lot of time. You want to be able to sit in a room on your own and feel okay. And if you can't do that, you've got no business trying to be in a relationship. People are trying to consume others and they're trying to consume relationships like they pop pills. If you're depressed, relationship ain't going to save you. If you're anxious, sex isn't going to save you, except temporarily. And then you're going to be like, oh, it's wonderful. We're in love and he loves me. Oh, he doesn't love me anymore. Now I'm back to being just as depressed or more depressed than I was before. Well, you're not handling your business, are you? You're not handling your shit. You haven't integrated your shadow. You've not done the work. You've not overcome these traumatized patterns from your parents. Good luck, man. Because in the Jungian worldview, which I find somewhat useful, not completely useful, we talk about shadow activation and shadow integration. When you are in love and you think it's wonderful, guess what? You're shadow activated. All this pus and pain and loss and grief from childhood elevates. The closer you get to the person, the worse it gets. The more he, she becomes he, and she, whatever the combination is, the closer you get in intimacy, the higher the stakes are. The higher the stakes are, the more stressed out you get, and the more your shadow will come up. The more your shadow comes up, your shadow activation is reflected in them. They become shadow activated. And guess what? They become abusive. You become abusive. You start gaslighting each other. You start lying. You start breaking each other's boundaries because you're anxious. You're terrified, and you should be. It's not a neurotic response in the psychotherapeutic sense. You're not wrong to be terrified. If you get this right, your future will be peaceful and sane. If you get it wrong, you will live in hell. And people who are watching you all know what I'm talking about. They've all lived in hell. It's literal hell. We have a tendency to understate how awful it is when you love somebody and you feel like it's not reciprocated, or you're trapped, or you're being abused. It's torture. It's absolute torture. I've lived it. I'm compassionate to that. I'm sympathetic to that. But I'm not sympathetic to people who rigidly hold to the belief that love and relationships is something to be consumed. Let go of that. It's never been like that. This is the product of romantic comedies, Disney, and ideology. You got to let it go. It's the relationships that work throughout human history across the globe. They were, we don't want to bring back arranged marriages, right? But we do need to start thinking in way more practical and far less romantic terms. If you want to spend 30 to 40 years living with another human being in the same house without you killing each other.
Okay, I love this. I love it.
Are you struggling to cope with your breakup or divorce? Are you feeling devastated, heartbroken, sad, and anxious? If so, please know that you are not alone and there is help available. Sara Davison, best known as the Divorce Coach, and her team of accredited coaches are here to offer you the support and guidance you need to navigate all areas of your breakup, take back your control, and start feeling happy again. Sara will show you how to dial down those controlling negative emotions, unhook from your ex, get back in the driving seat of your life, and design a future you are excited to live. Sara has a range of solutions to support any breakup, including free guides, one-to-one coaching, her Heartbreak to Happiness virtual retreats, live retreats, and you can even train to be a breakup and divorce coach with Sara too. Visit www.saradavison.com today and start to feel happy again.
So being more practical, what does that mean then, Richard? If the people listening going, okay, right, I get it. How do I become more practical when I'm looking for a partner?
Okay, so when you look at a project, you start with the end in mind, and you're going to have to be rudely honest with yourself. This was one of Freud's statements. One of the wisest things he ever said was the best discipline a person can acquire is the discipline of being brutally honest with themselves. I don't ask that you be brutally honest with other people. It's dangerous. Be carefully honest with people, but you must be brutally honest with yourself. Start with the end in mind. Do you want the experience of, you know, the heroin injection, the line of cocaine, of being in love and being shagged senseless? That's different to saying I'm trying to build a safe, sane environment with another human being. So there are people who are the line of cocaine who are going to shag you senseless. Good for you. Great. Go do that. But don't come crying to me when that dude or that girl isn't qualified to build a safe, sane home with, because they're two different people. So you've got to start within the mind. It's not going to be both. You might get lucky and you might find like a good mix, you know, somebody you can have a safe, sane environment with, and occasionally, you know, you could get crazy with each other, but that's chaos. That's chaos. It comes from the, so I use the Taoist philosophy a lot. It's either yin or yang. And in yin, we have pure potentiality. We have the rush of what could be idealism and chaos. And the chaos of that rush of experience will typically come from people who are emotionally abusive because they're powerful and power corrupts. So you meet beautiful people, you meet a beautiful man, a beautiful woman with a ton of options. Of course you want to have sex with them, but they're corrupted by their own power because they're rare and they know that they are. They have a ton of sexual options and it goes to their heads. They will be abusive because they're childlike. They're like King Joffrey in Game of Thrones. So you've got to be careful. You want to build a home with somebody. You want to create sanity and peace with somebody. You're going to be choosing a different kind of person. Start with the end in mind. Don't listen to your hormones. Don't listen to your emotions. Don't listen to the ideology. Keep it rational. Keep it practical. Of course, you want to be sexually attracted to the person. But if that's primary and you have problems, don't come crying to me. It's never been primary anywhere in history. You were not, if you were royalty, you were not married off to somebody because you thought they had a thick booty. That wasn't how it worked. You were married off to them because that was what was beneficial to others, to the clan, to the family, to the tribe, to the unit. We don't think like that now. We're rigidly individualistic. What's in it for me? How am I going to consume this person? So, you know, it's a real problem. I'm not trying to create a dichotomous situation where you're either going to be with somebody who's hot, exciting and abusive, or somebody who's dull and sane and you have a, you know, like a stable life. But you must consider the ways in which that is something of a polarity and something of a dynamic, and then realistically try and negotiate that. If you want to live in the same house as another human being for 4 decades, that's what a long-term relationship is. And if me saying that scares you, then go back and go, do I want this? Because some of you all don't want it. You don't want that. Living in a house. Imagine that. You're going to live in a house with one dude for 4 decades. Some people are scared, man. Of course they are. That's scary. That's a scary thought. One dumb, limited human being in socks with a bank account and like an itchy eye. They're not God. They're not a superhero. They can't save you. And if you believe that they can, or the relationship will, you will be disappointed. And then you will be one of those bitter people walking around with dull eyes, feeling ripped off and feeling disappointed that that human didn't do everything you thought they would do for you. They can't. They're just not capable of it.
Very good advice. And it's pretty hard hitting, I think, for probably a lot of my listeners. I think, yeah, realism, I guess. It's realism. I think a lot of people still want that fairy tale. I think you're right. They're striving for that. But actually, you know, we've got to get better at picking the right person for us, right?
Well, yeah, they do. But listen to what you just said. You're talking about adults. Like, I'm 43. If I turned up and said, I'm really looking for a fairy tale and you're my coach, I want a business and I want to be Bill Gates. I just want to be Steve Jobs. I want that fairy tale of being a multi-billionaire. Like, if you were any kind of decent coach, you'd be like, okay, Richard, that's nice. Let's moderate our expectations. That's a rarity. That's like a one in, these people are like one in a billion. Fairy tales? Fairy tales. We want fairy tales.
I don't think, man. Society, though, as we've grown up, we, you know, and I think that is definitely changing. I think if you look at the Disney movies, you know, it's not the fairy tale endings anymore. And a lot of them never really were anyway, actually. They're pretty gruesome stories. But, you know,
the original stories were.
Yeah. But I do think that, you know, I mean, I agree with you to some extent that, you know, I mean, fairy tales, yes, obviously, that's maybe for certain people, but we've got to aim big. We've got to dream big. We've got to set our expectations high, because if you don't, you're going to come in woefully low. So I think, you know, knowing what you want and identifying what you want is important. But again, it does take work. It does take compromise, but not sacrifice necessarily. I think sacrifice is going to be dangerous.
Okay, let me bring more yang cynicism to the yin idealism here. I want a girl who is, she's a Brazilian, Argentinian Victoria's Secret supermodel. She's also an online entrepreneur, and she's from a family of billionaires. That's what, and she's also got a PhD in philosophy. That's what I want. Okay. What's wrong with that? Well, that's not what I'm going to get, because that's not even out there.
Have you tried looking for it, Richard?
That girl doesn't even exist. So, you know,
email Richard.
Yeah. Hit me up. I've been waiting for you for about 15 years. You know, it's like, we've got to get our arms around reality. Yeah, dream big, aim high. But what are you aiming for? Are you aiming for stability and sanity? That seems reasonable. If you're aiming for stability and sanity, but like, you know, I've probably the same people you're coaching are some of the same people I'm coaching. I've had, you know, with all due love and respect, a 55-year-old woman show up for coaching and she's devastated because she cheated on her husband with a 25-year-old yoga instructor with the man bun and the six pack. And he shagged her 5 times and then left her. She's like, I'm the victim of narcissistic abuse. And I'm like, are you? Are you the victim of narcissistic abuse, or are you the victim of rather unrealistic expectations? What did you think the 25-year-old yoga instructor was going to do with you? Run away with you? Marry you? Why would you think that? Why would you let yourself think that? It's not sensible. It's not realistic. And what's worse, is it to accept the reality of the situation we're in, or to remain trapped for years inside of idealism? I see a lot of people trapped inside of idealism and dreams that are never, ever, ever going to come to fruition. Let it go.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, realism is important. And, you know, actually, if you think about what we want, I think that's quite dangerous. I think it's important to look at what we also need, which is actually quite often very different to what we want. You know, and that's part of learning and healing from past relationships. You know, I mean, I've been in toxic relationships, yeah, and not learnt the lessons in my 20s, only to repeat the same mistakes going into my 30s to end up, you know, in significantly difficult situations because I didn't listen. I didn't learn. I didn't bank those lessons. So life just kept on teaching me those lessons. I think when you identify, you know, what you need, that gives you a different perspective on looking for a partner. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think to sort of sound like a stock record, if you're going to create a relationship with, you're living with somebody in peace and sanity for 4 decades, what you need should prioritize what you want. And that should be obvious to people. Like, I'm not an advocate for compromise. I'm not an advocate for giving up on your dreams or anything like that. But be temperate. It's yin and yang. It's dynamic. One cleanses the other. The yin cleanses the yang. The yang cleanses the yin. So I might have my little moment of idealism, pure yin, pure creativity from chaos as an artist, as a creative. And then the yang comes in and goes, yeah, but practicality, how do you realistically think that's going to play out? How do you, you know, we've got to moderate these feelings. Yes, probably going for what you need would be an idea. Keep in mind what it is you're trying to do. you want to cultivate a safe, peaceful environment, or do you? So some people, when I say that, will be like, no, I want chaos, actually. I want the man to challenge me. I want him to bring drama into my life. I want him. Some people are addicted to betrayal. We need to have an honest conversation with ourselves. Do you like being deceived? Does it sexually arouse you to know your partner is cheating on you? These are difficult conversations, but they need to be had, because for some people, the answer is yes. They associate sexual attraction with betrayal. They associate love with deception. If those are your associations at the unconscious level, all the conscious work in the world isn't going to do anything, because your unconscious trumps your conscious. You know, it's like a 90%, we're probably functioning 95% unconsciously and only 5% consciously. So we need to be having these conversations. We need to have honest, hard conversations with ourselves and with each other.
Yeah, I totally agree. And sometimes when you've raised those behaviors from, or belief systems, maybe from your unconscious to the conscious, then at least you get to choose, because you're aware of it. Mm. And you can choose to do either keep going or maybe replace it for something else, which isn't always easy. I know a lot of my listeners struggle with trusting again. So they may be, you know, taking everything you're saying on board, going, okay, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take this on board. I'm going to start with the end in mind. I'm going to be more practical. All those things, really good advice. Where do you think you learn to trust again? Is it, yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that people have to earn your trust. It's not something you just give away. But actually, ultimately, in these, you know, when you've been through a toxic relationship, sometimes it's about trusting yourself to make better decisions. You know, where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think we say, I have trust issues. I don't trust people, but it's actually the truth. That's probably an alloplastic defense. And it's probably that you don't trust yourself, because why would you? You chose them wrong and it hurt you. Think about trauma and the impact it has. Like, you did a thing and it caused you terrible pain. It destroyed your life. It made you depressed. It made you wonder whether you wanted to carry on living. These are high risk conversations. These are high risk activities. We're all trying to sound cool and indifferent and like, yeah, you know, I don't really. It's your life. Intimacy is the big challenge. You can make money. Business is simple. You can get fit. Fitness is simple. These are all simple formulas. Love is very, very, very tricky. And in an anti-love culture, an anti-intimacy culture, it's even worse. So be boundaried. You know, take your time. You have to be able to sit in a room on your own and feel okay in silence. If you can't do that, you've no business dating. You don't need a boyfriend. You need a therapist. You don't need a boyfriend. You need a coach. You got to sort your life out. Because if you're anxious, depressed, you're emotionally dysregulated, and you're hoping to recruit a man into your life to regulate those emotions for you, God help you. God help you, because you'll be like putty in his hands. You will be so open to the manipulation, gaslighting, and abuse, and you won't be able to leave, because you'll have merged with him. He's now regulating your emotions for you. Oh God. And I'll come along and say, hey, just split up with him. He's abusive. And you'll go, uh-huh, fucking can't. I can't function without him. Okay. So something was wrong before the relationship began. There's parts of you, it's like a circle with broken boundaries, and where those boundaries are broken, the good that's inside of you spills out, and parasitic, vampiric, predatory types can get a hold of that. And once they got a hold of it, you detaching from that is work, and it takes an awfully long time.
Addictive when you're in there. But what I've found is when people get out of it, it can also be addictive talking about what they've been in. Do you see that? It's kind of like a toxic, addictive cycle to talk about it and to think about how toxic your ex was.
Yes.
Which can keep you stuck, right?
What star sign are you, Sarah?
You're into star signs now. Yeah, I'm a Leo.
You're a Leo, is it? So I'll come back to that in a second. So we're talking to women mainly. I'm a man. So let me mansplain something about women, because every woman enjoys when a man tells them what their experience is. everybody enjoys that.
Brace, just put a warning out to brace everybody.
Originally, like, you can punch the screen and pretend it's my face. So there's risk factors. My I've been at this for 8 years, and probably 80 to 90% of my coaching clients and followers are female, and I am part female, so I understand. I have emotional literacy and the emotional intelligence and the intuition of a woman. I'm blessed in that way. I have a lot of yin going on. So the risk is towards a tendency for self-harm and self-trashing. Men have it too. When you have a man with borderline personality disorder, he probably is anima possessed to some degree, but it tends to be more of a female tendency. Women self-harm, men rage and they beat people up or they kill them. Women self-rage and they hurt themselves. So you just mentioned this tendency to get locked in a cycle of talking about it. What's going on there? We must, as women, and I'm including myself so I don't get in trouble, we must watch for the temptation of self-harm and the temptation to relive the pain and the trauma again and again, because we can become addicted to that. It's still a rush. There's still an adrenal rush there. There's still significance there. Watch for it. Be careful. It is addictive. That's why when people literally cut themselves or they engage in promiscuous sexual behavior, which is, you know, this is classic for male and female borderlines, they do things that they don't like. They do things that make them hate themselves. They get in relationships where they're betrayed to relive the pain, to relive the abandonment that they probably experienced at the hands of their mother, most likely. Possibly the father, typically the mother. So yes, there will be a tendency to ruminate and to get addicted to talking and talking and talking and talking about this. We like talking as women. We use 2 to 3 times as many words per day than the average man does. I'm a talker. This is why I say I'm like a woman. So we talk 2 to 3 times as many words every day as a man. Why do we do this? Because a woman's way of connecting with others is verbally. It's through words. Men talk with purpose. Men exchange information. How big is your car's engine? How many wheels? They like numbers and stats and data. We just talk so that you can hear me, so that I hear you. So be careful. That's another addiction. That's another tendency. It's a self-soothing practice. And it works temporarily. But then what do you get? You get vulnerability hangovers. You spoke too much. You said too much. And when we talk, our words have power and we summon that back into being. So we've got to be really careful of when we're talking too much and thinking too much, the tendency to self-harm and the tendency to over-talk about the subject. Was that, did I have good mansplaining there?
Very good mansplaining. I'm still a bit confused as to the star sign relevance though.
Do you think it's relevant that you're a Leo?
No.
What are the character traits of a Leo?
I mean, as described in the books, if you believe that and follow that, I guess loyal, proud, maybe, loving. Gosh, I mean, it's not really something I've spent a lot of time studying, Richard. Why are we going down...
But you know that women generally more than men are fascinated by astrology and by tarot and everything else.
Yeah.
So there's a mysticism in women. Mystics are yin. Mysticism is always yin. If a man is a mystic, he's yin. So if a man is a mystic, he goes to a cave. Cave is yin. It's like the womb. And he meditates. If a woman is a mystic, she does the same thing. This is what nunneries and monasteries are for. You go inside and you pray and you meditate. And we work then in yin in the world of archetypes, mysticism, signs, and fate. Fate. So the what I was thinking is the reason why you wouldn't learn your lessons is probably in your star sign. You're either going to be a Taurus or you're going to be a Leo. That's what I was thinking. Because Leo is proud, as you said.
Yes, yes. That's very true, actually. So there you go. Maybe there's more to it than I've given it credit for.
Well, there's also, like, you know, I'm sort of talking semi-ironically here. There's another warning, which is, so I'm into tarot, I'm into astrology, and I do psychoanalytic my favorite part of psychology is psychoanalytic theory, which is as yin as it gets. It's all in the past. It's all in the darkness. It's all about the unconscious and archetypes. Be careful of thinking in archetypal ways of going, well, I met him and he was a Scorpio and I'm an Aquarius and that means this and this means that. Signs, sigils, and symbols. It's not meaningless, but we have to moderate that with yang, pure reason, pure rationality. Have a sense of humor, like be able to laugh at yourself when you say, oh, I met him, he's my twin flame, we're karmic soulmates, we're this, we're that. Let a little yang in and just be like, really though, isn't he just kind of a dickhead and he just is sexy?
Yeah, okay, well, it makes sense that way. I mean, yes, I get that. And, you know, I'm into tarot, actually. I did a great podcast interview with Angie Vernicki, who's big in tarot and does all the Hollywood stars and fascinating, absolutely fascinating. It really is. So, yeah, I mean, I love all that. And maybe that's because I'm female. I do think that, you know, having some, you know, mysticism is interesting and understanding that is good. So I didn't realize that you were into that. So that's fascinating because that is a slightly different side to you that maybe other people haven't realized too.
I'm also sort of like letting people know that, like, because if you look at me and you go, oh, here's a guy who goes to the gym, lifts weights, boxes, and he's just like, ah, this is all nonsense. This is what you have to do, blah, blah, blah. I'm not coming from that place. I understand getting trapped in idealism. I understand getting trapped in romance. But one of the things that I have to remind myself and I remind my clients, romance is a concept, etymologically speaking, is fiction. It was a style of writing that was, you know, it was from the 13th century forward. But the way we use romance today is from the 16th, what we're talking about is from the 1660s forward. And it's fiction. The purpose was to titillate and entertain, not to educate, not to inform. It would be like us watching, you know, Marvel's Avengers movies and go, oh, this is how we should organize society. This is what life is. It was never meant to be taken literally. It was for entertainment. So I'm a romantic. I have to moderate that yin, romantic, idealistic, mystic side of myself with yang practicality. It's very, very important.
That's society that, you know, a lot of people may not have seen too. I do think that's really interesting.
I used to do tarot readings. I've been in tarot readings since I was 14.
Do you still use that? Do you still use the cards for yourself?
I used to, but you're not supposed to. And I've completely stopped now because it will drive you bonkers if you do that. Every once in a while, if I want a reading, I have a friend called Adil. And he fuses Chinese and Western astrology. He's an expert on that, and he's an excellent tarot card reader. If people want to find him, if you go on my Instagram, look through my followers and look up Adil, you'll find him. He's really, really good.
Awesome. Maybe I'll get him on for a podcast. Sounds like a great guest.
You really should. He's fantastic. He's really the best reader I've ever had readings from. Really.
Okay. I mean, I'm a big believer that, you know, people should find out about all these things, you know, and also when you're coming out of a toxic relationship, you know, there's a lot of trauma and dealing with that trauma is important in whichever way that works for you. And I've been researching recently lots and lots of different ways of working through trauma because, you know, coaching is great and it will definitely help you move forward. But a lot of that trauma resides in the body. And a lot of that you have to release, whether that's, you know, through a more spiritual path or maybe a more holistic path. I don't know if you're a big fan of any of those different ways of moving through, but that, you know, things like osteopathy, but also EMDR, you know, tapping again, I think is really powerful. There's so many different things. Is that something that you follow as well?
I personally do it, but I don't teach it much. I think if I was going to stick in doing this, I would have gone more that way. We are not a body and a mind. We are a mind body. We're one thing. So if there's trauma in your mind and in your emotions, it's damn sure in your body. So to just do talk therapy, highly cerebral transactional analysis or psychoanalytic therapy, you're missing out. You also have to look after your body. If you're healing, don't drink. If you're healing, moderate your caffeine, stay away from the prescription and the recreational drugs, sort your sleep out, have a good diet, fast if it works for you. You know, be aware of what you're allergic to, because most of the serotonin is created in the gut. You want to feel good? Look after your body. I do yoga, I kickbox, I lift weights, and I dance. And it's, I couldn't live without it. So yoga and dancing, that's at the yin end of the spectrum. And then the weights and the kickboxing, that's at the yang end of the spectrum. I keep it balanced.
Advice, Rich, is really good. Now, I know a lot of people will be wanting to know how to find you. Where can they go to find out more about your work? I know you've got online programs. Where can they go to find out more?
If you wanted to get an online program, you'd go to spartanlifecoach.com. If you just wanted to see more of my material, you'd go to YouTube, put in Richard Grannan, and my main channel is there with, I think it's got like hundreds of hours of free tutorials that you can consume.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being a guest. I have one final question for you, which I'm very interested to know the answer to. I ask all my guests, because my podcast is called Heartbreak to Happiness, and I think it's really important to know what happiness is for you, so that even when you're going through difficult times like we've been talking about, you can tap into that along the way. So what is happiness for you, Richard?
Taking a walk in nature with precisely zero other humans around in total silence. That's happiness for me. Or it would be going to a dance social, and then you have like one really good dance where you really connect with somebody. You just pull off between the two of you an amazing dance. I think that's what a good relationship is. Between the two of you, you are dancing, yin meets yang, yang meets yin, and you pull off some really good moves. You concentrate, you improvise, and you do a good job. Then you'll be happy.
I love that. Powerful, powerful. What a way to end. Well, thank you so much, Richard. As always, you've been fantastic. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. To find out more about Richard, do head on over to SpartanLifeCoach.com or find him on YouTube. And I look forward to you joining me on my next episode.
That's it for today's episode of Heartbreak to Happiness. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to win a free ticket to one of Sara's virtual retreats. The retreats are a transformative combination of live webinars with Sara herself, coupled with empowering online video programs designed to help you cope better with your breakup and start feeling happy again. For more details, head on over to heartbreaktohappinesspodcast.com, where you can also get a copy of Sara's free gift. Thank you, and join us again on the next episode for another dose of Heartbreak to Happiness.